Wildfires cast an amber haze over the landscape. The temperature is rising. Devastating storms cover large portions of the land. And that's today's weather. Now back to the show. WALL-E was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm sorry. It's just too
present. Right before we start recording, we're recording early, and he's like, why don't we just release the episode early? And now I get it. You're trying
well,
to keep
sure.
your jokes current.
That was my thought as well. As I was watching this, like, damn, this is real.
It really, really felt very real this time.
Yeah. It's when this came out, it was like, this might be the future. And it's like, yeah. Yeah, it was.
You guys knew exactly what was up.
Came.
Nostradamus wrote this film. Apparently.
Life moves pretty fast. Hi, I'm Sean Collier. I'm here with the disgruntled daughters of a newspaper empire. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Hello. Because we watched The Green Hornet.
We did.
There it is.
More Camille recently
and I
than usual.
Caught eyes, and we were like, well, do you know? I don't know. Do you know?
Wait, did we watch Spider-Man? I don't know.
Basically. And Camila Adams.
Spider-Man, hello.
Yeah, The Green Hornet, we gave it a 38. That was 27 spots from the bottom, exactly one spot lower than Madagascar Escape to Africa. It was, we felt similarly unenthused. All right,
Madagascar was a hair better than yeah. The Green Hornet.
I agree. Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, like, I probably laughed more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Madagascar. And colors
the
are
hippos
nice.
Hippos were fun.
Yeah. Voice cast. It's... But anyway, what was that noise? That's the noise of trying to find a second thing to say about The Green Hornet. We did a whole episode. At least we have a topic this week. It's WALL-E.
Yeah, boy.
It's a big, important... I was practicing. I was kind of...
That's
the haze getting to me.
that felt like WALL-E goes to hell.
Right. Which spinoff that just tries to
free ideas, guys. Free
clean
ideas.
Up the souls and the it'd be good.
Little it puts, compacted squares of souls.
Yeah.
And then that's in the Hellraiser universe, because those are the boxes.
Disney owns...
Pinhead.
Disney owns Hellraiser now, technically.
Oh, okay.
The new one dropped on Hulu. And Pinhead is a lady this time, so Pinhead, Disney princess? Yes, officially confirmed. Disney princess of hell.
I can't even. Like, this is all just Disney. Stop it.
that is weird, right?
Yes.
That, like, I logged it. Speaking of the... well, that was off mic. There's... Every studio has their little screening platform. If you're not going to a physical screening, you can often have it digitally delivered to you. And I logged into the Disney one to watch Hellraiser. Doesn't that seem odd?
That seems really wrong.
And yet... The world we live in. I don't think I had seen all of WALL-E since it came out. I liked it a lot when it came out. I don't know that I was one of those people that was like, the cinema is reborn, but I liked it a lot. So I came in feeling good. What is everyone else's history with this little guy?
I've seen it in pieces. And I don't think I'd ever have sat through and watched the whole thing. So, I mean, it never really appealed to me to go see it. I don't know, 2008, that was probably my really dark horror era.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So will I see Hostel 2 or
right.
WALL-E?
I saw it in 2008. I loved it in 2008. I definitely remember thinking that people were being a little extreme about it making the cinema reborn because I was like, We all see that this movie gets bad around 40 minutes in, right?
Yeah.
I don't think I, at the time I was skinny and less educated, and I think that I wasn't as affected by how gross the fat phobia and ableism gets at the end of this movie. Mm. I just thought it wasn't as good anymore, right?
Mm, yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, so this starts as 40 minutes of cinematic wonder and then just becomes an onslaught of, ugh.
Yeah.
So I don't like it nearly as much as I did back then. And I hated watching it yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I loved watching the first 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll watch that again as like a standalone short kind of thing.
It's interesting. It felt like a very long short.
Yeah.
If you go to enough Disney and Pixar movies in theaters, they do still put shorts in front of a lot of them.
Right.
And a lot of those are great. There have been a lot of very good, you know, 7-minute films. They win the short film Oscar sometimes.
Right.
And this felt like, how long can we make one of those?
I mean, I've seen 40-minute animated shorts before.
Yeah.
And some of them have been good. My Year of Dicks isn't quite 40 minutes, but that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if Wall-E were a 40-minute short, I mean, honestly, maybe we wouldn't be talking, like, it wouldn't be a number one movie in America. It wouldn't be on our podcast. But, like, I still think it would have some cultural relevance. And I think that it would be a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think they could have stayed away from the humans?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And gone to, like, you know, 72 minutes?
Yes.
I think I think probably.
Oh, there's another version of this movie that is a feature that is also good. You're right. But that requires, like, writing 2/3 of the movie again.
Yeah.
I'm like, they could have just kind of hit pause. Like, have her wake up, like, you know, rewrite 30 seconds, right? Have her wake up on Earth and a happy ending and great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are big topics to get into, which we will do after the normal segments. So, to start, you know, sometimes we remember it's our turn to write a recap and we prepare, and sometimes we don't. The last episode, I didn't remember. I just kind of described the Green Hornet in either less or more detail than is necessary, depending
on... This is even worse because I tried to prepare. I tried because if you'll recall, last time I had to do this, I did Romeo plus Juliet, and I resisted the temptation to use ChatGPT to write an iambic pentameter summary. And today I was like, oh, this is a movie about how reliance on robots will make us lose our bones. So I should ask a robot to do my job for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had Colin ask ChatGPT to do it. And the results were so soulless and devastatingly hollow that I don't want to go forward with that. I am going to wing it.
It is so, I mean, we don't have time to get into ChatGPT vis-a-vis Wall-E, but it's so interesting how detailed, brilliant, but soul absent it is.
Yeah, I mean, all right, listen, I'm doing it.
Read the one that ChatGPT wrote.
And then I
wrote.
Will tell you that Colin, when I replied with gross, Colin gave him a second one that said, can you do that again, but acknowledge fat phobia? All right, this is what ChatGPT has to say.
First version or second version?
This is the first one.
Okay.
Wall-E is a heartwarming and thought-provoking animated film set in a distant future. Earth has become a desolate wasteland, overrun with garbage, forcing humans to evacuate. Left behind is Wall-E, a small waste-collecting robot who has developed emotions. While diligently cleaning, Wall-E discovers a plant that could hold the key to humanity's return. He meets Eve, a sleek robot sent to Earth to find signs of life. They form a deep connection and embark on a thrilling adventure in space, confronting a tyrannical corporation and reawakening the dormant spirit of humanity. Mm. Wall-E reminds us about the importance of taking care of our planet and the power of love and resilience.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
Right.
In a robotic way.
Can I do that again? Can I have my 60 seconds as a human?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I want to keep both of them in the episode.
All right.
That was just your little refresher.
All right.
Go.
All right. So Wall-E is a little trash compacting robot, and he is the only one on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making skyscrapers out of little boxes of trash, and he's collecting thingamabobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then he meets Eve, who's a little egg, and she looks like an Apple product. And she is after a plant that he found. And once he shows her all of his toys, like Elliot does with E.T., but when he shows her the plant, she like goes into hibernation mode. And then he really sweetly like holds umbrellas over her and takes care of her. And then spaceship comes and picks her up, and he grabs onto the spaceship, and they are in space together. They get to a giant cruise liner filled with humans, and the Sigourney Weaver voices everything just like in Finding Dory, which I thought was interesting.
Yes.
There's a HAL 9000. Jeff Garland is the captain of the human ship, and he decides to like real humanity because he starts reading the encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's fat, and it's the worst possible humanity could ever. This is the worst thing ever for humans to be fat. No. And it ruins the entire movie. But Wally and Eva return everybody to planet Earth with the plant, and over the credits, they rebuild society.
More than a minute, but thorough and human, right. Everyone.
And acknowledging actual things. Like, that was what bothered me so much about the ChatGPT responses. It doesn't even actually describe the plot.
No.
It's just sort of like, this is what that movie is.
Yeah. Mm. This came up in the stand-up class. Where do I teach that, Robin?
Arcade Comedy Theater, right here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you should, if you're in the Pittsburgh area, you should take comedy classes at Arcade Comedy Theater. Someone mentioned trying to get ChatGPT to write jokes, and I fired it up on the spot, and I was like, hey, write a late night monologue, you know, with a little bit more information than that. It's very impressive, because in format, tone, structure, length, it's perfect.
Mm.
It just doesn't have any ability to actually be funny.
Mm.
Like, it doesn't understand, it understands the mechanics of what a thing is instantly, more than a human does. Because the kids in the class, sorry, many of them are adults.
I always call my students kids, even when they're older than me.
They're people in the class that are not getting it. The robot gets what it's supposed to sound like.
Right.
It just doesn't understand what humor is. Mm. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And weird and scary, and the world we're entering.
Right. I think it's funny that you mentioned Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. But, like, this is the fourth movie that I have heard of or seen that Sigourney Weaver has been referenced to as some sort of a god-type person.
Right?
And I just want to... We should all probably just keep an eye out on that.
Is she actually? Maybe. Not going to rule it out.
Right. I'm just saying, you know, it's... if you see her, be nice. I'm just saying.
Spoilers for a 12-year-old movie. When she shows up at the end of Cabin in the Woods,
right. That's what it is.
It's there's not a moment where I'm like, this is surprising. Like, of course it's her, and she's here, and she would. If she walked into any room I was in, like, actually, this is all a simulation. I'd be like, well, I'm surprised to see you. But not at what's being told to me.
Right.
Yes.
She is the only... She and... what's his name? The Christopher Guest guy. Christopher Guest, a frequent associate who's dead now.
Fred Willard. Yes.
I don't think I realized he was dead.
Yeah, he died a few years ago.
They're the only, like, bright, quote-unquote, bright points among the cast. Jeff Garland's kind of exactly wrong for that part, I think.
I mean, we were talking before we got on mic about reading Burn It Down, so it's not a great time to be listening to Jeff Garland's voice.
Right.
Especially, like, I found the whole bit where he reads the encyclopedia and learns to like Earth so fucking insulting and gross.
Mm-hmm. But even, other than, who else is even, the robot voices are basically sound designers.
Mm. Right. And they're perfect.
They're perfect.
Yes.
It's not like, what a performance.
Yeah.
I would say that that's a performance.
Yeah.
Okay. The part of the movie, and this is after the first 40 minutes, so maybe if we make the short that is perfect, we get them into space somehow, where she kisses him and he floats back and goes, is like the best sound for the feeling of kissing someone you love for the first time.
Yeah. No, that's really nice. But let me say facts, because there aren't that many.
Okay.
There aren't that many, because there are too many to say. This is one of those movies that there are whole books about, so kind of just hit the main points here. Like, this was released June 27th of 2008, the 23rd number one movie of the year, winning its opening weekend with $63 million, beating fellow debut Wanted with Angelina Jolie. Is that, she makes a bullet? Curl.
I hate that movie.
James McAvoy.
Second place, 50.9 million, closer than you'd think. That was also a hit. I'm surprised to say this is a 1 week number one movie in America. And it lost the top spot to a film we've covered. Wally fell to second in its sophomore frame behind the debuting Hancock.
Mm.
okay. Always forget that that was actually a hit. It earned $62.6 million, Wall-E 32.5 its second weekend. Wall-E spent 7 weeks in the top 10, $223.8 million. Fifth overall for 2008 behind Dark Knight, Iron Man, Indiana Jones 4, and Hancock. Hancock made more money and was the fourth highest grossing film of that year.
Yeah, this is why I never saw Wall-E. This is Iron Man and
Dark Knight.
Yeah, and like there was way other shit for me to
well, and Dark Knight. I mean,
yeah, that is a good movie year.
Yeah.
I feel like we don't talk about it the way that we talk about like 99 and
mm-hmm.
I think we should maybe start talking about it more.
Let's look at 2008.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, really the thing is that's setting the tone for until now. Mm. Like dominant, well-crafted superhero movies, a step forward in animation.
And I see that maybe now is not the right time to be like, and it's all good.
And everything's
Thank you.
Fine.
Thank you for remaking the culture into what it is now, which we clearly love.
Here is a very specific ranking. This is the sixth best opening weekend ever for a G-rated movie.
Mm.
Everything above it is also Pixar, Toy Story 4, Toy Story 3, Monsters University, Finding Nemo, and Cars 2. At the time, this was also the most expensive animated film ever made.
It's really good animation.
Oh, it looks fantastic.
The beginning, especially, looks so different from anything that Disney or Pixar had done.
Yeah.
Like the realness that they give those piles of trash is so transporting and affecting, and it makes the transition to everything looking cartoonish in outer space that much more abrupt and unpleasant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I want to, we're going to get to the big conversation. I want to give a slight nod to the, why is there video of actual humans in this movie, but the humans look like that because they evolved that way. I do appreciate that detail of connecting those dots, but it's a bad decision.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, that's what it's supposed to be. It's
the
Yeah, they show the like prior captains and they like get fatter and more cartoonish.
I saw the mural, but I didn't really see
it. Like the first one is a picture of a normal person, and each one looks a little more like a cartoon character because of the bone density and the terrible metaphor.
This movie has slight bone loss.
Yes, over the course of 15 years. At expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
Okay, so this won Best Animated Feature.
Yes.
I don't even know what else was nominated that year. This was won it in a walk.
Only two, I think. I want to say it was Kung Fu Panda and something.
Bolt. Bolt was that year, adorable. I'm pretty sure. I enjoy Bolt.
Me too.
So, I should add that. I watched that on an airplane. Got to add it to my letterbox list.
It was nominated for five more Oscars.
Five more. Okay, I know it was nominated for Original Screenplay.
Correct.
Score?
That sounds right. I believe the Peter Gabriel song was nominated because I think that's the year he like threw a hissy fit because they were going to do a medley performance and he was like, not me.
Sounds right. And yes, that was nominated.
So it might not have been that song that was nominated that he did that, but it... Okay, so that was nominated. Neat. So we're at four now, is that right?
You said screenplay, which it lost to Milk.
Okay. That was a good acceptance speech.
Yeah. Score, which it lost to, any guesses?
Slumdog Millionaire.
Slumdog Millionaire. Yes.
Which, valid.
And the song lost to Jai Ho.
Extremely valid.
Very valid. So you're missing two more. They're pretty.
Oh, sound. Sound and sound.
Sound and sound. Yeah. Lost mixing to Slumdog Millionaire and editing to The Dark Knight.
Interesting.
Mm. That ties it for the most nominations for an animated film with Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, wow.
And it won everywhere else it could win. It won the BAFTA, won the Critics' Choice Award, won the Golden Globe, somehow won two Grammys, won the People's Choice Award. It was in the National Board of Review top 10. It won everywhere it went, except the Annie Award.
I was just going to say, did it win the Annie Award?
It didn't. Kung Fu Panda won the Annie Award.
The Annie Awards are weird.
They're very particular. Yeah. It is now in the Library of Congress. It is just the second Pixar film after Toy Story.
And the Criterion Collection.
And first Pixar and the first Disney film in the Criterion Collection.
Weird.
With a 4K re-release just last year. You know what's nice? There is a 7-minute short about one of the other robots. It's called Burn-E. It's the one that burns things. And that is the only other connected media. There is no sequel. There is no series. There is no spinoff. There are no plans. They're not going to do it.
I like it.
Good. Finally. There's one that is just left alone.
Yes. I like it. I'm surprised that there aren't 500 4-minute shorts about Wally. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's some stuff somewhere on Disney Plus. And I really loved, did you see him pop up with the Pixar logo at the end?
Oh, I missed that.
No, I didn't.
Oh, if you go all the way to the end of the credits.
I wasn't going to do that.
He replaces the Pixar lamp's light bulb with an LED.
Oh, cute.
And accidentally knocks over the R, so kind of contorts himself into an R. It's adorable.
I mean, you know, Wally is cute as fuck.
So, so cute. Like, they truly captured whatever scientific knowledge humans have about what makes things cute and put it together into the cutest robot ever.
I mean, ever.
Ever.
I
don't think so.
He makes Johnny Five look like a real piece of shit.
You know, not to dismiss Eve. Eve is also perfectly designed.
Character design.
And
she's
I know
an independent woman. She doesn't need anybody's help.
I know the Apple stuff.
She does not.
She literally does not.
Yes. No.
I know the Apple stuff is a little. It's like, okay, when you get to the seventh, this is like an Apple thing joke, right. But.
Is that the sound that Apple's made?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the Apple startup noise. And the HAL, the steering wheel, is literally played by the pre-Siri Apple voice generations.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
But yeah, the fact that she looks like, you know, what you thought the final version of the iPod would look like in 2008 is great.
The only case where Apple and Android do connect and get along and can coexist.
Yes. And it's a good comparison because Wally is modular.
Yes.
I don't think that Eve is. When she's broken, you just got to buy the new $9,000 Eve.
It's like, oh, sorry, there's nothing we can do here.
Wally's got a new eye.
I wonder why he's the only robot left.
I believe.
They didn't want it bad enough.
I believe that the other ones broke.
Okay.
And that he has collected broken parts of robots.
And fixed himself?
To fix himself.
Because in the trailer.
"700 years into the future, mankind will leave our planet. Leaving Earth's cleanup in the hands of one incredible machine. His name is Wally. After all these years, he's developed one little glitch. A personality. He's extremely curious. And just a little bit lonely. But all that is about to change.
I completely forgot to watch the trailer.
Well, the trailer's good, and it has a really good voiceover guy that made me miss voiceover guys. Mm. But they're like, he has one design flaw. He's grown a personality. And I'm like, is that what this is about?
ChatGPT kind of said the same thing. It's like he's learned emotions. And I'm like, why can't we just think he has emotions?
I guess it's maybe implied because when he does the whole when she does the reboot at the end,
oh.
And he's just like, you know, stone face basically. Okay. So I'm assuming like at, you know, how long has it been? Well, is it 700 years?
Yes.
This has been. And, you know, he's after once he starts collecting his little baubles.
Baubles.
Yeah.
And things like maybe
watches Hello Dolly.
Yeah. Over and over again. And what song is he listening to?
The Sunday Clothes song?
There's a song on his little cassette tape that starts.
Oh.
There's a ballad, too. which I think is also from Hello Dolly.
Oh, okay.
I've never seen Hello Dolly.
I've also seen Hello Dolly. That was such a good choice for the movie that they picked, where it's like it has the trappings of a classic Hollywood movie, but isn't one. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a hit. It was nominated for Best Picture, but like none of us have seen it.
Yeah.
It's not part of the culture anymore.
It's not Singing in the Rain.
Right,
it's not
exactly. The Sound of Music. It would have felt so corny if he was watching Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
Or Mary Poppins, right? It would have felt like so like eye-roll-y, but with Hello Dolly, it's like, oh, how sweet.
Yeah, it's like just enough recognition,
yes,
but then also like, oh, this is a nice little jewel, gem that he's found.
Like, you know the thing where you go to the lake house and they've got the few VHS,
like VHS,
right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that's what we're watching. It really is.
Oh, the
that
Ghostbusters
kind of
tape didn't work. What's next?
For
like
some
Ernest
reason,
goes to camp.
That is the kind of feel of Wally watching Hello Dolly. Mm-hmm. Perfect choice.
Well, we keep talking around it, and as much as this is a thing in the culture and this is a thing on Twitter, you know, if you're not as paying attention to the movie discourse as we are, I mean, Robin, do you want to take this?
This movie hates fat people.
You brought it up in the Madagascar episode.
Yeah.
This movie hates fat people. I just like it's that simple. Like there's just it's an incredibly it makes me sad and it's hard to talk about.
It's just I feel like it's not I mean just kind of giving you time to collect
yourself
here. The point that they're trying to make, it could have been made without the way that they made it. Like it could have just been like all sort of different sizes of people just being lazy as fuck.
Right.
Just like because this is where we are.
Also okay. I'm gonna do this. This is an auditory medium and I have to talk for it to work.
Right. Right.
You cannot see my bald fists.
Why does it matter?
Yeah.
Why does it matter to these people what humans look like 700 years from now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
why does it matter to people who looks like what anything in the present, right? Like that is also true, but the idea that they're trying to scare us by showing us that humans could become round really bothers me.
It's the problem as I see it is taking such a lazy route to make the point that, you know, if you're trying to say, oh, if we're not careful, we're going to, you know,
devolve,
you know, or evolve in negative ways. Mm. And when there's so much care, you know, when you talk about the look of the first 40 minutes of the movie, when there's so much care to so many aspects of the movie, and you're like, how do we make a point about, you know, the risks of, I don't know, a sedentary lifestyle or a screen-obsessed culture or a corporate takeover of our basic
Amazon,
you know.
Right.
How do we make that point? Oh, make them fat and roll around in...
It is definitely...
Roll around in wheelchairs, basically, that look differently enough. Yeah. That's such a lazy, shitty way of making the point you're trying to make.
That's why I also referenced ableism, because the idea that there is something... They're not just saying it's wrong to be fat. They're saying it's wrong to be sedentary. And you're saying, and I feel that that is also a problem, right? Because there are people who can't walk and they're still people.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, why make a big deal out of, oh God, a culture where no one walks?
Yeah.
Why does it matter?
Yeah.
Why does it matter?
That it's the thing that, you know, is very wrong about the way that our culture deals with size and fitness in general. You can't reduce these things to how fat are you and how long can you run.
Right.
Like that the nature of your health and fitness is so much more complicated than that.
Right.
And it's not a one-to-one thing. It's not like you're lazy and you don't get up, so therefore you're a jelly bean versus, oh, look, oh, every skinny person over here must be, that's just not reality.
Yeah.
And I agree. It feels very, very lazy for this movie.
And I think the point that they were trying to make, or it was done well in a Ready Player One.
That's an I don't like that movie.
Right.
But that's a much better example of the problems of screen life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just kind of...
And in that movie, there are people with a variety of...
Exactly.
As you do. Look at... Sorry. Now I'm going to just talk down to another group of people. Look at unhealthy nerds. Yeah. Some of them are big. Some of them are that scrawny, gangly, greasy thing. Man, that sounds disgusting.
Well, okay.
But yeah, there's different ways to be unhealthy other than, look, they're all big and round. Mm. Therefore, this society is unhealthy.
And I also think that... Because they show us an infographic about the reason people have become fat is because of microgravity.
Yeah, your right? bones start to go away over one generation space, let alone many.
Right.
Which is true.
It's not even, I hate using this word because I don't think anyone's body size is something that we should be laying blame on, but it's not their fault.
Right.
So why be so... actively hateful about it? Because if you haven't seen this film, it's not just that all the humans are fat and round, and you called them jelly beans. I think that's a good description.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's not that they all are using mobility devices, mm-hmm. right? It's they're all of these intense moments of specific rooted in the current culture fat phobia that really mm-hmm. gross me out. Like the giant sodas mm-hmm. with straws. Mm-hmm. I love a giant soda, and I love straws, and I am so tired of
it. And you're allowed.
And right. it's such a weird little specific detail from current fat phobia to be like, oh, these people with their big gulps, right?
Yeah.
You know? And when I mentioned last week that there's a really good maintenance phase episode about this, mm-hmm. and they talked about how this came from the People of Walmart era.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's like, there is a People of Walmart vibe to this movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We didn't even know we had a pool, right? Yeah. And there's this implication that they're all dumber because they're like this whole, I think the part where he's learning about Earth and is excited. Mm. I think that it's supposed to be they are so blinded by consumerism that they're not curious, but it really mm-hmm. reads as fat people are stupid.
Yeah.
Mm. And then that fucking part at the end when the ship's autopilot is off and everybody falls out of their mobility devices mm-hmm. and rolls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was really too much.
It is a just punch in the fucking face. Like yeah. it's so, I hate it. I hate it. It grosses me out and I hate it.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to go all fucking Hollywood elite, man. But there is, when you look at this and when you look at the whale, for some reason, the movies don't seem to know how to have a conversation about health without just making that about size.
Humans don't know how to have that conversation.
Well, humans don't know how to have that conversation. But I haven't read the script for the play, The Whale. Maybe it's just as gross.
Yeah.
But it felt like, yes, it is bad to eat until you die. Mm. But you didn't make that movie. You made the movie of look at this circus freak. Like, why? Yeah. Why, Hollywood? Why?
I think they just go for the low-hanging fruit. I don't know if it's because they feel like their audiences are too ignorant and dumb to understand levels, the complex levels that
I don't. I just
is,
don't think or, they
or they don't
think
care.
Of it. I don't think that most people in the world, period, and especially in the Hollywood elite, as you said, which is even more set to body structures.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they know that it's wrong to do this.
Yeah.
I do want to say that, like. I don't want to be like Britta on Community and be like, oh, I can excuse racism. Right?
I can excuse racism, but I draw the line at animal cruelty.
You can excuse racism.
Like, I don't know exactly why this issue is super personal to me. Like, I'm a medium-sized person.
Yeah.
I think that part of it has become more personal because of the mobility part, because, like, I'm like getting choked up. Like, I will at some point in my life not be able to walk. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that doesn't make me less of a person.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Maybe it just comes for, maybe hopefully it's like a changing of the guards at some point. Like once these people get out, these people of a certain age, because you know how when we were growing up, like what was like tossed to us by the media of like, you know, and then the generation before that, you know, ladies, if you want a slim figure, make sure you smoke a pack of cigarettes a day, like to curb those cravings. And it's just like,
well, that works. I can tell you that, no, that'll work.
Does that really work?
I think it also depends upon like what your smoking reasons are. If it's just an oral fixation thing you got going on, then you're just not eating all the time.
I see.
But either way, but like, you know, with Cosmos and all the 17 magazine, yep. everything that the women have been like pounded in our brains since we were like 12, old enough right. to read is like, ah, blah, blah,
right.
blah.
And like my disability comes from over exercising because like I basically like I wasn't diagnosed as anything, but I essentially had like what
Jesse
they call
Spano,
exercise
guys.
Bulimia. Right.
Jesse Spano.
Right. So
I didn't know that was a thing.
It is a thing. So anyway, what I wanted to say is that we've watched a lot of problematic faves.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to be like, this one is worse than all of them.
Yeah.
Because first of all, it's not. But it's just more personal for me for whatever reason. And it was really hard to watch.
Well, and it's ableism to me is one of the most underrepresented, remix that. People of different physical and mental abilities are very underrepresented
yeah.
in movies, to the point where in Spider-Verse, when there's an uncommented on shot of a wheelchair basketball game,
mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, I can't think of the last time I've seen that on screen.
Right.
More than, you know, I can think of seeing more non-binary and trans people on screen in the past year.
Wow.
I could think of not just, any other, I'm sure there are others that I am ignoring in saying that, but
right.
it feels very underrepresented. So, you know, this might happen upon one of the big areas that movies just aren't paying attention to.
Right. And then the other point I want to make, and this also ties to the whale, this movie gets genuinely bad. Like, even if you mm-hmm. hate fat people, I feel like most people should be like, this really falls apart in the third act, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, isn't that just self-evident?
No, I mean, to me, I found little connection watching this movie to begin with. Like, you know,
okay.
Wally is cute. The first 20 minutes or so, like, it's beautiful, artistically. And the score, and I was impressed by the fact that so much story was told without
right.
any dialogue.
Right.
And, you know, and that was very impressive to me. But you're right. Yeah, it does kind of fall apart after that, after like a certain point. Maybe it's even just like after he meets Eve, after they, you know, after we establish their connection and mm-hmm. their friendship. And I'm just like, it's fine.
Well, as I've said, I'm a sucker for Elliot showing E.T. his toys. So I do yeah. really like, and I like genuinely like the love story between mm-hmm. the two of them.
The moment with the lighter
is
like, yes, put that in the time capsule. That is as good as movies get.
She tries to dance.
Yeah.
She doesn't know how to dance.
I was relieved that, because I was afraid that Eve was going to end up being like hostile, like the whole way
yeah.
towards him. Like, and so it was nice that it's like, oh, so they do have an actual
yeah.
friendship.
But like
I was
said,
so mad at her
like...
when she ignored that statue. I was like, I'm what?
But I really like when she hides him under the towels. It's very much, sometimes with Colin, I'm like, I love you, but please stop talking. And that yes. felt like that to mm-hmm. me.
Yeah, we've all been there.
My reaction to all of these words and more is that this is very hard to evaluate.
Yeah.
Particularly mm-hmm. in putting a number on it. Because the good stuff is so good. And while, yes, it turns into a clunky and offensive metaphor, even after that, if you added up every minute of that,
yeah.
I don't know if it's 20 minutes. Because even after they go to space, the business in space with the fire extinguisher is fantastic.
I was going to say, there are things in the middle of the movie that I sort of like mentally insert into the
right.
perfect beginning of the movie. The
right.
fire, what are those things called?
Fire
extinguisher. Dance among them.
And even the escape stuff is at times very, very funny and very entertaining.
I like Mo.
Yeah.
Poor Mo.
Mm-hmm.
The robot cleaning up after.
Yeah. So how much do you take off for, you know, yeah, being the problematic part of it and the clunky parts of it, but then the good stuff is so good. It's very hard.
Yeah.
We will suspend rating. You don't get a rating. No. We'll still come up with something.
Do you have our list of prior ratings up?
Why?
Because
the same thing you gave Blazing Saddles? I'm thinking about it.
Yes, that's one of the, I'm like, let's look up what we did with our other problematic faves. Blazing Saddles, we've got Silence of the Lambs in there. I know that I think I was in the 90s on Silence of the Lambs.
Blazing Saddles, I gave an 84, Robin gave a 55, Camila gave a 7.
Oh, I'm
well,
way,
it's definitely bigger than, it's definitely more than
I'm
7.
I'm way higher than 55 on this.
But Silence of the Lambs was relatively unaffected.
I gave it Princess 90, and the Frog.
93 for me, 87 for you, 94 for Camila. Princess
really?
Frog.
Oh, I thought that was the Princess and the Frog. No. Like, I gave
what?
It a 94.
Camila's like, that does not sound like me.
Camila 43, Robin 63, Sean 75.
Okay, that sounds more like it. Princess and the Frog doesn't have the highs that WALL-E has.
No.
But its racism is more clunky and foolish than actively hateful, in my opinion. I'm a white lady. Maybe I'm wrong.
I want to acknowledge something that in acknowledging I'm not going to stop doing because I am what I am. I am aware of the fact that it's incredibly easy for me to be like, yes, problematic. Still great number.
Right.
My friend Eric Leslie uses the phrase, I sit atop privilege mountain. There are so few ways in which I am underprivileged. Therefore, when I say I find it acceptable to acknowledge something without lessening your enjoyment of that thing, it's really easy for me to say
right.
that, and I
right.
want to make that point.
I don't think there's an obligation to knock yourself off of Privilege Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're not trying to drag people up there with you,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and being like, you like this.
Right.
That's what it becomes obnoxious behavior, in my opinion. I'm going to go 65.
I think that's a number.
And I don't...
What am I, giving you a grade on your grade? Say whatever number you want.
65.
82.
49.
Woo!
And you're just bored.
Yeah.
You're just like, eh.
I like it, though. I do like not having the lowest number on this movie.
65 and a third for WALL-E, which we don't get our treat.
Oh.
We're resetting on waiting for our little treat.
Yeah.
Listen to the last episode.
I thought about tanking it on purpose. Just
You're like, one, let's take a break.
I feel like this movie is too good for us to lie and take
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If it were the Princess and the Frog, we'd be like,
oh, I'd be like,
oh, the hell
there's nothing of merit here.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely not singing Almost There in my head right now.
I don't remember that song.
Oh, it's good.
I remember I've Got Friends on the Other Side.
Okay. That's good too. Yeah.
Banger. 65 and a third. And listen, if you've got a problem with, you know, this Criterion National Archive film, different people get different opinions,
mm-hmm.
y'all.
Mm-hmm.
It's subjective. And to go off of a thing that I really shouldn't have gotten fired up about on Twitter, there was this Twitter trend this week.
Mm.
Name a movie critics were wrong about.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Just a couple of things. One, no, I'm not. My job is to state my opinion. I'm not wrong about what my opinion is.
Critics have been definitely wrong.
Critics have been wrong.
Right.
And you can name individual critics who approach things from ways that are dishonest or
just mistaken.
Or mistaken
yeah.
or you know, who just read a movie. But this notion of like, this thing that I love has a 41% on Rotten Tomatoes. Critics are wrong. It's like, no, it's just one, this is subjective.
Right.
And two, for the most part, the honest thing to do is to give our unfettered opinion, which isn't a matter of right and wrong.
Right. Which it's is why you find a critic that you agree with.
That, that mm-hmm. likes the kind
you
of things that you like.
Right.
Right.
And here's why I bring this up. You're a better person for admitting that a thing you love isn't perfect
mm-hmm.
than for trying to pretend that
right.
it's perfect.
Exactly.
You know, it's so much more honest to be like, no, I know it's got problems, but I love it, than it is to be like, actually, Guardians 3 is a flawless film.
It's like, let me tell you about the cinematic genius that is Truth About Cats and Dogs.
Yeah.
I do enjoy that movie.
I do too. Yeah. I fucking love it.
Just like what you like and don't worry what other people think of it. I mean, on the one hand, as a professional film critic, that's weird, but No, it's not. Just like what you like.
I think you're right to the extent that you can't say that critics are right or wrong for liking or disliking something. I have read a lot of reviews where I'm like, you clearly don't get this. How did you get your job?
Yeah, that'll happen.
So I think critics can be wrong. And I think if I really sat here and thought about it, I could come up with a good response to that prompt. But I am sure that most of the replies weren't that.
Vertigo, The Shining. You know, there's right. a lot of them. I take issue with the phrasing of the question.
Yeah.
What's the point? The bingo card. Mine's in my car, which is in the shop. I'm not lying. Robin picked me up to get over here.
That is true.
I'll keep it in the car because I have to take the car to get to the podcast.
Mm-mm. Womp womp. I believe they were on a train, yes? Like some sort of people mover. Like the situation, she's sitting. There's like, I remember people...
No.
Sitting on a thing, and when
the individual cars are going
when
in
no
unison.
No, there was like, I swear there was something, there was like three people sitting.
Oh no, you're right.
And she's like, and he's pointing to Eva, and or he's asking somebody to he's like, excuse me,
that was a train.
All right. Yay. Is that a bingo for you?
No.
Oh. Mm. Not me.
But we finally cross off. It might be for me, but I wouldn't get to claim it. That's the rule.
Right.
I could claim it next week.
Okay, another language spoken.
I know it.
She does talk to a robot and robot squeaks.
No, she speaks three languages before she says directive.
Oh, great.
I saw that
bingo!
Somewhere.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Yay!
Yay, there you go. Camila, it's your second bingo.
Hooray!
Of 2023. We'll give you time to select, so we will draw a movie today. The next time we record, you pick the movie that comes
down. Yay!
Outstanding.
Yay!
All right, didn't
you have Kaj, like, draw from a hat?
Yeah.
That was so cute.
I guess we'll do it again.
Was it seven? Is that how we got to seven?
Yeah, that's how we got to seven. My two-year-old pulled seven out of a hat.
Well, look forward to see what you pick. I knew I bought that Saw box set for a reason. And Bad Guy in Wall-E feels like a ripoff of the Bad Guy in Portal. I don't know how that works, because Portal came out in 2007.
But how it works is that they're both ripoffs of HAL 9000.
Yeah, they're both ripoffs of HAL. It's really close, though.
Okay.
I just forgot to say that earlier and saw the window. Great. We will look forward to finding what Camila has us watch. In the meantime, what has Camila been watching? Just going to you first. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth.
Let me pull up my letterbox. Okay. TLC Forever, documentary about TLC. Fan-fucking-tabulous. I am working on a piece about how important TLC was to me.
I can't wait to read it.
And, you know, my blossoming into womanhood or the woman that I am. So, I mean, I would highly recommend it. Lifetime did this. And if you don't have this, get the Lifetime app. Mm-hmm. It's free. You don't have to sign up for anything. You don't just watch it. It's absolutely perfect. Sound of Metal. I finally watched that.
Oh. What'd
you think about it?
I really liked it a lot.
That movie has stuck with me way more than I expected it to.
Yeah. I was thinking about it a lot, like afterward, like the rest of the night. It was just like, wow.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, you know, did he do all of this for a girl? Like, is that what this is? Like, basically, and like, would he have made the same choices if she had just like broken up with it? You know, whatever. But, what I really liked about it is how they, and I know I'm late, like this movie came out, but the way that it forces us in his shoes by not giving us captioning, like for the first, while he's learning everything and when he's put in this environment and everything, and like we don't understand what everybody around him is talking about, and you know, and neither does he. And I thought that was like a really great move.
Yep.
And his performance, like when old girl leaves, like I'm like, oh my God, what is Riz?
Riz Ahmed.
He's such, I mean, I enjoy him in a lot of things, I think he really found his footing in this role specifically. So I would definitely recommend that.
He's great. And she's great too. Olivia Cook.
She was, it's
ready, from Ready Player One.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But I spent the whole movie, where do I know her from? And then it came to me, Bates Motel. That's
no.
She's one of those, I don't know how she's not more famous yet. Yeah. Especially because
she's very charming.
Especially because Ready Player One was a huge hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's completely forgotten. Yeah. It's like that movie never existed.
Mm-hmm. And I watched Ant-Man and the Wasp. Quantumanamanama.
And did you find it as deadening as I did?
I mean, the way that it looked, I wasn't really that... I don't know. It just wasn't hidden. It just like yeah. something. I did not really enjoy it as yeah. much as I don't think I really. I'm like as much as I would have liked to. Like, you know, Marvel is, you know, supposed to be the good time, you know, go to just fun times. But it's just like.
Was it your review on Letterboxd that said Luis could have saved this?
No, but I did see that.
and I was just like, could've. This is so true.
He could have, mm-hmm. because halfway through it, I was like, I miss Luis. Yeah. As like the most enjoyable part for me was Ant-Man getting his ass whooped by Kong, because that was not a fight. That was he just came in for an ass whooping, like basically.
Speaking of problematic faves, boy, do I hope we hear some really mitigating circumstances about that guy.
You're not gonna.
Soon.
You aren't going to.
I know, because we hadn't heard anything about him when this movie came out, and I was like, this guy's better than Thanos. This is the best villain they've ever had.
Yeah, it really fucking sucks.
That's what I cut myself off. I don't know if you remember this, and I cut it out of the episode, but when I was talking about Ant-Man last week, and I was like, and... I don't have it in me today. Okay, that right, was what yeah. I was like. I'm not. I don't want to talk about this because it is a huge fucking disappointment.
It is. It really yeah. is. And yeah,
I've been on board with him since Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Right.
Oh, God. That movie yeah. rules.
Anyway,
And also like the what the fuck was the point of the Corey Stahl
MODOK? Just for a little comic relief.
I wish everyone could see Camila's face. Yeah.
So angry. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Stop it. Stop it right now.
Is the machine designed only for killing? Mm-hmm.
So dumb. So dumb.
What I'm not going to do is be like, it's okay. Because it's really not. I'm not happy with Ant-Man and the Wasp. After being... hurt personally by Guardians 3, I kind of feel a little bit better because it was just frivolous. I'm Got like, it. Oh, the Bill Murray part was cool, and I liked some of the little creatures. I liked the little guy that was obsessed with holes, and you know, it moved along. But no, they're like I said, literally one episode ago, they gotta pull it out. They're in a tailspin.
Yeah. Oh, but I guess another fucked up itness. Docuseries, The Curious Case of Natalia Barnett or
no.
Grace.
No, what?
The Where? True life story, the fucking real story of the orphan, basically.
Oh, no. Absolutely not. I don't want any part of that.
Yeah,
no.
That fucked
no.
with me.
No.
Everybody's a liar. Everybody's crazy. I don't even know. It'll just like really the six parts of just winging you the hell out.
No,
you're
nope,
just
nope,
like,
nope.
But how old was she?
I watched the Shiny Happy People docuseries.
I started to, but
it was also extremely bleak. I'm having a bleak media week. Spider-Man. I think it's great.
Did I build it up too much
it's
for you?
It's only
by
half
saying
a fucking
perfect?
Movie.
I don't care.
Okay.
It looks too pretty.
It's half a movie. I haven't rated it on Letterboxd yet, I don't think, because like...
You're waiting to see the rest of it?
Well, I think I'm... Honestly, yes! Yes! And you haven't seen it yet, right?
No, not yet.
What they are setting up could go very wrong.
Could.
And ruin the series. And I don't want them to do that.
I hope not. Like,
can I say this without it being construed as a spoiler? It's concerning because, like, no, we already have Loki season one.
I didn't watch Loki.
It's this story.
Okay.
But
listen, it's great. It looks amazing. And I'm obsessed with Spider-Punk.
Oh, yeah.
But I did want Daniel Kaluuya to say, "Go bit by radioactive spider. Incredible."
There are flaws in this movie that, to me, just... buckle under the weight of
how cool it is.
This is the best looking thing I've ever seen.
So
I do want to see it again purely because there were parts where I was confused about the plot because I was so like pie eyed.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, this looks so cool.
I know we all talk about the hundreds of Spider-Mens and how they're all a reference to something and all of the detail and all of the, and the way that the thing that blew me away with the first movie, the way that every character's animation changes to fit that character.
Love it.
Unbelievable. But now I'm at the point where I'm marveling at the design, where the way that every room is lit for every character and the changes from moment to moment. This movie, more than the last one to me, is a great leap forward in animation because it so opens up. You can draw anything any way you want to.
More than the last one.
More than the last one.
I just think the last one was so fucking out of nowhere striking in a way that this movie can't be because it comes second.
I think my
two reasons for thinking it is not better are, one, the thing where I just, unfortunately, it can't be. That's not its fault. And two, it's half a movie. I got to knock points for incomplete work.
I guess. I also was like, it's been a while since I've seen To Be Continued. That's refreshing. And you didn't bring up Spider-Cat at all. You the cat person of the room. Well, let's go with the relevant thing, the 1972 sci-fi film Silent Running. That's what everyone wants me to talk about.
This is the one with Hot Brewster.
This is the one with Hot Brewster, and I messaged the group. It's like, look who's young and hot.
Stared at him for a full minute, being like, I have seen this man, but where? And then it all at once came into focus.
Mm-hmm. And I couldn't, I had to put pieces together of like, he's always grouchy. He's wearing a weird hat. I don't remember his name.
I've seen him in things from the 70s before, so like, he is young Brewster already existed in my mind somewhere in the dark files.
Mm-hmm. He's very young in this. This is 51 years ago, so how old is he now?
80-something.
Yeah, anyway. I don't actually have a lot to say about Silent Running. It's just interesting to watch the same weekend I watched WALL-E, because it's about all of humanity is living on ships in space.
Oh!
And there's a few of them whose job it is to keep all of the nature on like biodome ships, and then they decide they need those ships for commercial reasons and just give up on nature. And Bruce Dern steals one ship and goes off into the darkness to try to preserve that last little bit of earth.
A really fun WALL-E companion.
Nice little double feature.
I
loved it, and then I was like, this is just the first sad spaceman movie, isn't it? It really is the beginning of sad space.
Oh, boy.
But it's gore. If you haven't seen that, it's beautiful.
Does he have daddy issues?
No, he's just kind of a loner. He's kind of a nature guy.
Okay.
But if you haven't seen that, it's beautiful. It's not perfect. It's a sad space movie. It's a little slow and dull at times, but gorgeous. The guy that did a lot of the effects for 2001, this was his directorial debut. And his name, because we respect filmmakers and don't just go that guy, is Douglas Trumbull. Trumbull's directorial debut.
What if life in space really isn't that dull and long and just like you don't have that much time for reflection and to be sad?
Everyone's up there like, I'm having a great time in space. This is
movies
a way to
did
live.
Not prepare me for this.
The things that people might, The Boogeyman, that's a movie, sure.
I'm going to go see it tomorrow.
It's not a bad time. Yeah. It's kind of smile mixed with, there was one other thing that was very close, and I've deleted my notes. It's smile from last year mixed with some other horror movie you've seen before. Mm. And it's a Stephen King, there's these kids, they're sad. They got a spooky problem. They got to confront it. Here we go. A couple of people in it are pretty good. Some are not so good.
So what's all that noise about people like dropping dead in the theater because it's scary?
I haven't heard that.
No.
I was hearing stuff like, you know, they had to like cut out after one of the preview screenings, they had to cut out or tighten up a couple of scenes because people were so fucking scared. They were like crying and hyperventilating and shit.
It's very jump scare. Like, it's very like, what's that thing in the darkness? But but no more than like Insidious, you know.
Also, that happened to you in the weirdest movies, right? You know, like I had a like full blown meltdown during District 9 because of some of the body horror in there, to the point where Colin was like, do we need to leave? And I was like, I don't leave movies.
No, I had that with 8mm. I cried for like ever.
That movie. That movie is so upsetting.
Yeah.
And not good.
There was a movie called The Abandoned, which is which almost doesn't exist. It's a 2006 horror movie and international co-production between Bulgaria, Spain, and the United Kingdom. Mm-hmm. I was watching it in a theater alone, which always adds a little spooky.
You're
in it. I don't remember what happens in this movie other than there's two people and weird stuff's happening and they're looking around and they go into the building, and in the building there are zombie doppelgangers. They're themselves as two zombies waiting for them. And that is the only time that I got up out of my seat and went to the back row so that there was no part of the room couldn't see.
That's what me and my family did with Candyman.
You got to protect your back.
Yeah.
We were in a theater all by ourselves to see the original Candyman, and at some point it's like, nope. Move to the back.
Yes.
Back up against the wall.
The all-time champion of that is Paranormal Activity. Mm. That's the one where I knew a guy who was working at the waterfront at the time that said that ushers were having to go in after a showing and convince people to leave because they were like white knuckling on their seat and wouldn't move. And like people were like peeing themselves, like there were more people on duty to clean up the seats because so many people were pissing themselves. And that's gross. A movie where the door closes sometimes, you know, it's not 1-to-1.
Listeners, what movies made you have a full-on freak out in the theater?
It's fine. I'm not going to tell anyone not to see The Boogeyman, but it's not. You don't have to run out either. Obviously, I found Spider-Man great. I also want to mention The Killing, which Robin mentioned before. I caught up to. That is a great movie. You should watch
it. It's a great movie.
Now you've heard me be positive. I watched the fucking Transformers.
I'm sorry for your loss.
There's just...
Why are they still making them? Do they still make money?
I mean, we'll see.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to beat Spider-Verse this weekend.
Yeah.
Was Mark Wahlberg in this one?
No, this is a prequel, I guess.
What?
This takes place in the mid-90s. So,
that fun at all?
Soundtrack was good.
Okay.
I think that's just because they didn't want to bother paying Mark Wahlberg or any of the other actors. So it's Anthony Ramos and Dominique Fishback, both of whom deserve so much better.
I love Dominique Fishback.
Me too.
It's just so boring.
She deserves a paycheck. So good for her.
Yeah, good for them for getting this.
Let's get all these shitty movies out of the way,
yes.
Dominique.
I've seen more than just the two that we watch, but after whatever I had previously seen of these and the two that we watch and this time, they're bad. Sure. Lots of things are bad. It's that they're so uninteresting.
Yeah.
Every plot, this plot again is there's a big bad robot who needs to get this certain MacGuffin that's hidden on Earth so that he can destroy the universe. And so the good robots and some humans that stumble upon the good. That's every plot. Every one of these movies is that. And that's not an interesting plot. Every third movie has that plot. The thing that clicked with me this time is I don't like looking at them. they're
ugly.
They're ugly and soupy and uninteresting. Yeah. So when they're fighting, and when they fight, because they're machines, I'm like, yeah, I'm still not clear on whether or not you feel pain or can die.
Yeah.
So when he stabs his pointy thing through the, I'm like, does that matter? Is that a significant?
Right. What are these rated? What is this rated?
I don't know.
Probably PG-13.
Probably PG-13. Okay. It's.
It can't be rated R, and it's got too much fighting to be rated PG.
Yeah. There's 4 minutes where, spoilers, Bumblebee, who you thought was gone, comes back and dives out of a plane to Mama Said Knock You Out and beats up a bunch of people. And I'm like, okay, that one.
Yeah.
You know what? 2 out of 10 instead of 1 out of 10.
It is nice when you get those little moments in terrible movies.
I mean, when you add Mama Said Knock You Out to just about anything.
That's a good point.
No, it was really, really, because don't call it a comeback. Yeah. I'm like, and this is what bothers me. I think it's me or us, because when he showed up, and you know, it's the music to a degree, when he showed up, people jumped out of their seats and cheered and clapped at the end of the movie and were
I don't know what am I missing. Didn't clap at the end of Spider-Man, and I saw it in a packed theater. This is the first movie I've seen in a packed theater since COVID. And I was like, why aren't we clapping? I truly was like, excuse you, rude.
We've talked about it before. The screening audiences are more friendly. Yes. Everyone is just in a great mood when they get to see a movie early and it's free.
Yeah.
But a little part of me was like, I guess I know human beings who like these movies, and I just don't understand.
The one with Hailee Steinfeld is supposed to be good, actually. I have never seen it.
That's what people say. But that's the most recent one, and it didn't make a lot of money. It did okay. So hopefully this is the last time I have to have this experience. I bought myself a special nice dinner beforehand. Like, I need.
I just see Sean.
I kind of did that yesterday.
Sitting by himself, like, cutting a steak.
I literally made steak last night, and I was like, I got to watch fucking Wall-E.
Yeah. Sometimes that's. Because in my head, I'm like, I am not going to the Transformers. I am going to get some wings and some tater tots and a good beer. And then on the way home, I'll watch fucking Truman Show. Let's draw a movie. Next time, Camila will offer a choice for us. But this time, and we don't have any vetoes, I don't think.
Camila still has a veto.
I think I have a veto.
So much power over there. And this time, we will watch The Graduate.
Okay.
Is that?
Are you like, The Graduate was the number one movie in America?
No, I'm not surprised that it's the number one movie. It just feels like going from WALL-E to The Graduate is like, Tony, what made you want to play the hits?
Like going from kindergarten to college.
Well, yeah. I have not
watched this movie since high school. And when I saw it as a teenager, I thought it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen.
Oh, wow.
So I am very interested to see if Teenage Robin was a schmuck or not.
No, I don't think I've seen it. I mean, maybe I saw it. Appropriately enough, I feel like I saw it soon after college.
Okay.
I think I saw it one time.
I
know me and my ex-husband went as The Graduate and Mrs. Robinson for Halloween one year.
Mm.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting couple's costume. This is on the long list of movies that after that 100 years, 100 movies thing came out in 97 or 98, my dad instituted movie camp, which was all the movies on that list that I had not seen, which he thought were worthy, we had to rent and watch.
Interesting.
And discuss. It made me the way I am.
I like it.
Well, before, I'm going to listen to so much Simon and Garfunkel over the next 2 weeks. Before we get to all of that, WALL-E. June 27th, 2008, what was the number one song in America?
Pink.
A smart person would have listened to our Madagascar episode.
Oh, yeah.
This was not directly mentioned on any of the recent episodes, but adjacent. Because we've been in the same era. What year was Madagascar?
It was
2008.
In theaters at the same time. That's why we talked about it.
And even Green Hornet was 2011.
Right.
We're in the same general range here.
So not Pink?
No, not Pink.
Rihanna.
No.
Madonna.
No. Like all of those people but Pink, and like everyone we talked about last week, we're still looking for a Super Bowl halftime performer.
We're still looking for a Pussycat
Beyonce.
Dolls?
What?
Pussycat Dolls.
Pussycat Dolls, I don't believe, have made it to the
no
Super Bowl.
Idea.
They should have.
That would have been a fantastic Super Bowl performance.
Yes.
Neither, no.
Super Bowl.
Pussycat Dolls do a remix of Jai Ho.
Yeah.
But they say Jai Ho. Yeah. They can't even pronounce it correctly. It's so awful.
That's such an interesting time. Pussycat Dolls and burlesque and
my brain created one file and put both Pussycat Dolls and the movie Coyote Ugly in it. And I don't feel that's inaccurate.
Yes.
It's pretty. Yeah. It's very on brand.
Yeah.
Justin Timberlake?
No. We're looking for a band, actually.
A band?
One of the rare band Super Bowl halftime performers. I mean, rare now. It used to be all the time. And then they ran out of old rock bands. No, not Aerosmith. And not an old rock band. Well, a middle-aged rock band now.
Coldplay?
It's Coldplay.
Oh. The Scientist?
No.
Viva La Vida?
Viva La Vida. Mm. The One Week Rain. Which is good.
I'm glad that's a number one song.
Yeah, I know.
That song was every fucking where for around 3 years.
I know Coldplay are like, you know, synonymous with vanilla, but that's a good song. I got no issue with that song.
I got no beef with Coldplay.
No, they have some really good songs. They also have a million songs that don't matter at all.
Right.
But like, I think their batting average is decent.
It's like they're like free breadsticks.
Yes. Oh my gosh, you're so right.
Coldplay are the free breadsticks of music. You're not there just for them, but you're glad that's part of the deal.
Yes, you're not mad at it.